Srimad Bhagavatam, third canto, chapter 6, Creation of the Universal Form, text 37. Ekantalabham vachaso nupumsam.
Ekantalabham vachaso nupumsam.
Shushloka malaya gunavadam ahu. Shruchesha vidvadbhya upakritayam. Katasudayam upasamprayogam. Eka anta. The one which has no comparison. Labham. Gain. Vachasa. By discussions. Nupumsam, after the Supreme Person. Sushloka, pious. Maule, activities. Gunavadam, glorification. Ahu, it is so said. Shrute, of the ear. Cha, also. Vidvadbhi, by the learned. Upakritayam, being so edited. Katasudayam, in the nectar of such a transcendental message. Upasamprayogam, serves the real purpose, being nearer to. Translation, the highest perfectional gain of humanity is to engage in discussions of the activities and glories of the pious actor. Such activities are so nicely arranged in writing by the greatly learned sages that the actual purpose of the ear is served just by being near them. Purport. The impersonalists are very much afraid of hearing the activities of the Lord, because they think that the happiness derived from the transcendental situation of Brahman is the ultimate goal of life. They think that anyone's activity, even that of the personality of Godhead, is mundane. But the idea of happiness indicated in this verse is different, because it relates to the activities of the Supreme Personality, who has transcendental qualities. The word gunavadam is significant because the qualities of the Lord and his activities and pastimes are the subject matter for the discussions of devotees. A rishi like Maitreya is certainly not interested in discussing anything pertaining to mundane qualities. Yet he says that the highest perfectional stage or transcendental realization is to discuss the Lord's activities. Srila Jiva Goswami, therefore, concludes that topics regarding the transcendental activities of the Lord are far beyond the transcendental realization of Kaivalya happiness. These transcendental activities of the Lord are so arranged in writing by great sages that simply by hearing of these narrations, one becomes perfectly self-realized, and the proper use of the ear and tongue is also achieved. Srimad Bhagavatam is one of such great literatures, and the highest perfectional state of life is attained simply by hearing and reciting its contents. Om Agyanatirmidandasya Agyananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militang Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasani Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. This verse speaks of gain. Today's society is very much gain-orientated. Those of you who are family persons or intend to be family persons always have to be concerned with gain. There's pressure from your relatives, pressure from your friends. How are you gaining? How is your bottom line? So this is how persons are habituated today. There may be some friendship, there may be some romance, but sooner or later, the bottom line becomes the reality. Gain is not simply an institutionalized phenomenon in society, but it's very individual in terms of your individual psychology. This gain fever has been implanted in you, so much so that you feel if there's not material gain going on in your life, something is wrong with you. Because everyone is looking at you through those lenses. Because everyone is looking at you through the lens of gain. Are you gaining? You unconsciously even start to make gain the standard of your relationships. You feel uncomfortable if you can't tell others that there's some gain, material gain in your life. People look at you like you're a kind of failure. What's happening? This affects even our devotees, because our devotees are enmeshed in human society. So to the degree that the devotee is not spiritually advanced, to that degree, the devotee becomes affected by the currents of mundane society. So you can see, even amongst devotees, you can see that even amongst devotees, they become an anxiety. What's happening about my gain? Am I gaining enough? And the family members of devotees will pressure them. How can you live without increasing your gains? This is not human life. This is not civilized. Even the spouses of devotees become insecure. Our family is not having gain. Okay, we're chanting Hare Krishna, we're hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, but what about the gain? So in this way, we've become all part of the International Material Society for gain consciousness. And that syndrome affects our Krishna consciousness. And indeed, this is the International Society for Krishna consciousness. So what to do? In the first canon of Bhagavatam, the answer is clearly given. Dharmasya hyapavargasya. Your occupational duties are actually not meant for material gain. They're meant to support a lifestyle of spiritual development. So Bhagavatam in the first canon gives the strict injunction that do not engage in work or business simply for material gain. That's an indirect outcome. This is revolutionary, isn't it? That material gain from your job or business is an indirect outcome. The direct outcome should be that your occupational duties, your jobs, your business are supporting a bhakti lifestyle for you, your family, and, of course, as much of the world as your resources allow. So this is a completely different way of approaching work, a completely different way of approaching business. By acting in this consciousness, Krishna will be in the center, and you will see Krishna make all arrangements for his devotee. Just by your changing the approach you have to your job, to your business, by seeing your occupational activities as means simply and mainly for the support of a bhakti lifestyle. That way, you have the goal clearly in mind. As I often explain when I'm speaking about this subject of spiritual economics at universities, our bhakti yogis, our Krishna conscious persons, go to work to give. They don't go to work to get. They're not material gain conscious as the foremost principle. They are spiritual gain conscious as the foremost principle. This attitude change will make for a transformation of your execution of occupational duties. Going to work, going to business to give. In that way, you can see, as a family person, as a householder, you can see yourself more in relation to the brahmacharis, to the sannyasis. And then you can see why Prabhupada writes in one purport in Bhagavad Gita that for a householder who is sacrificing everything for the pleasure of Krishna, the householder is as good as a sannyasi. So you may wonder, well, is that just some kind of encouragement? Or what's going on? But you see, if one actually, through family life, is going to work in order to give, how can I give more of a spiritual culture to myself? How can I give more of a bhakti culture to my family? And of course, our real family means all living entities. Sarva yonesu kunteya, murteya sambhavantya. Krishna claims all living entities take birth from the womb of material nature. And I am the seed-giving father. So the devotee is concerned with all living entities as the family. So you want to care for all family members in the greatest sense, as far as your resources allow. So this is a completely different way of going to work. And this is a completely different way of handling the so-called daily grind. The daily grind is mostly there because we have this idea of gain. Oh, I'm going to work to gain, to get. But if you transform that motivation into something positive, it's like Arjuna was complaining in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita. How can I do this grind of a battle? It just, there's just nothing in it for me. I'll ruin my friendships. I'll destroy families. Cause so much social havoc. I'm not into the glory. I'm not into the fame. I'd rather walk off the battlefield. I don't want to handle this grind. But then Krishna taught him how to fight in order to give. That's the miracle of Bhagavad Gita. And many people have a hard time understanding it. How can a warrior give? But what did Krishna say? Mam anusma yujam cha. Fight and think of me. Nimitra macham bhavasavisachan. You can be just an instrument. That's how Arjuna gave. He dedicated 100% his occupational duties for the pleasure of Krishna, for Krishna's purposes. So similarly, if you go to work in order to give, your consciousness becomes transformed. You're out of the gain illusion, in which you have to analyze everything you do during the day. How much is in it for me? I need to get more. I need to get more. The devotee is thinking, how much is in it for Krishna? We have nothing against wealth, but we know who it belongs to. If a devotee has an opportunity to earn wealth on behalf of Krishna, he does so. Just like you may have heard the example how devotees showed Srila Prabhupada a picture of a famous yogi of that time in India. And the yogi in the picture was seated next to a stack of gold bars. And the yogi was like this. So, of course, many people in India would think, oh, this is very transcendental. This is a real sadhu. He's untouched by the contamination of money. So Prabhupada said, well, let them come take a picture of us. It'll be like this. Not for us, but for Krishna. We don't artificially renounce what belongs to Krishna. We give it to the rightful proprietor. So we're eager to use everything for Krishna's pleasure. This is, as you know, yukta vairagya, real renunciation. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur says that this principle of yukta vairagya is actually a confidential principle of bhakti. We take it as ordinary, but it's actually a very deep and mystical, so to speak, concept of how not to shy away from the world, but to utilize everything in the world for Krishna's pleasure. We shy away from the world in terms of our own gratification, but we're very gain conscious for Krishna. So this verse is telling us, ekanta labham vachaso nipumsam. The highest perfectional gain of humanity is what? Is it your financial bottom line? Is it how big your house is? Do you own your own house? How many cars do you have? How much money are you sending to relatives in India? Is that the standard for what is the perfectional gain of humanity? No, believe it or not. The highest perfectional gain of humanity is to engage in discussions. Talk? Haven't you heard that saying, talk is cheap? Or another expression, money talks, nobody walks. Money will get you places. And now we're hearing that the highest perfectional gain of humanity is to engage in discussions. But discussions of what? Discussions of the activities and glories of the pious actor. The activities and glories of Krishna. How can it be that simply sitting amongst devotees and hearing and discussing Krishna is the highest gain in life? We need to get over our impersonal contaminations to truly understand this point. Because even amongst our own devotees, there can be some kind of residue of callousness and insensitivity due to lifetimes of rebelliousness against Krishna. So in the core of ourself, we could be having some kind of doubt or resistance that I can't really accept that simply by hearing and chanting about Krishna, all my problems are going to be solved. I mean, we say that, of course. But in terms of our own personal journey, our own personal experience, do we actually accept that as a guiding principle of our life? So we should let this verse challenge us. Is my life, is my family arranged in such a way that it's acknowledging what is the highest perfectional gain of humanity, which is simply to discuss the glories and activities of Krishna? Just as Prichit Maharaj did with Shukadev Goswami. That was the pinnacle of human civilization. Hearing, discussing Krishna's glories. Everyone knows the first verse of the Shikshastaka, where Lord Chaitanya says, Param Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtana. Let there be all victory for the congregational chanting of Krishna's glories. So we recite that verse, but we may not realize that that verse is calling for each individual devotee to have a personal victory through hearing and chanting about Krishna. Then you'll become a strong devotee that can actually go the distance. When you see that you can indeed have a concrete, impactful transformation just by hearing and chanting about Krishna, then your conviction conviction will be scientific. Otherwise, simply you can move along at a slow pace, thinking, well, I believe in Krishna. That's enough. And there are, as we were discussing last night, there are nice social benefits for believing in Krishna and associating with devotees. Your life feels meaningful. You have some friends. And all you have to do is follow a few rules most of the time and chant your rounds most of the time, and you're in. Make sure you wear your neck beads. Every devotee needs to have an experience in which you can conquer over Maya just by hearing and chanting about Krishna. When your mind is afflicted, when the lusts in the heart seek to swallow you up, if you can simply hear and chant about Krishna and see the victory, you'll never forget that. And indeed, Krishna will give the chance for every devotee to earn this great mercy. So we shouldn't see obstacles in life, our material life, as cause for dropping our spiritual activities. Because subconsciously, deep down inside, there's that assumption. How is hearing about Krishna, how is going to Bhagavatam class, how is chanting Hare Krishna and dancing, what's that going to do for my bottom line? And when there's a tough time, when you're feeling the pinch, you know what you've got to do. Focus more on material methods and let the spiritual practices slide, right? Because that's the way the world is. And then you recite the resignation mantra. You know what the resignation mantra is? What do you want out of me? I didn't make the world like this. I'm just trying to do my best. You know, don't blame me for the way the world is. The world's all about profit and gain and the bottom line. And I'm going through some tough material circumstances. So what does it mean when you're going through tough material circumstances? You've got to be more material. You've got to buckle down. Just leave the spiritual practices aside. Not completely, but you know. Of course, you still believe in Krishna. You still offer pranams. But the main thing is you've got to focus. If you're going to be able to swim with the sharks. And you didn't make the ocean that way, but the ocean has sharks. Why can anyone blame you, right? So the pressure is on you, not only from yourself. You put yourself in so much anxiety, but the pressure is on you from your family. Material challenge. You've been made redundant. The PR is not working out. What are you going to do? You feel so rattled. And it seems obvious that you should become more material in such situations. Of course, being a devotee doesn't mean you're inattentive to material affairs. But being a devotee, in terms of the fullest understanding and the proper understanding, means that your life and soul is hearing and chanting about Krishna. So how many trials and tribulations do you have to go through before you realize that? So this is why the Bhagavatam is saying the highest perfectional gain of humanity is to engage in discussions and of the activities and glories of the pious actor. Why is Krishna called the pious actor? Sushloka moli. You would think that Krishna is beyond pious and impious activities, just as devotees are. Bhakti devotional service is not a pious activity. It's not good karma. But you see, in a civilized human society, punya, piety, pious activities are the currency, so to speak, just like the dollar in the world economy. Everything is still tied to the U.S. dollar. And so people evaluate their currencies in relation to the U.S. dollar. In a Vedic civilization, the currency is punya, pious activities. That's how value is measured. So it's not that Krishna and Krishna's associates are on the platform of pious activities, but it's just to give you some idea. The use of the term pious actor is there just so you can understand how immeasurably great Krishna is. Because you need some frame of reference. So in a civilized human society, the frame of reference is punya, pious activities. Therefore, Shukadeva Goswami says about the cowherd boys sporting with Krishna in Vrindavan, Krita Punya Punja. How many pious activities did these cowherd boys perform to have this opportunity to play with Krishna? Now, you can't play with Krishna simply through pious activities. But because pious activities is the currency, the way you measure things, it's like, how many trillions of dollars does it take for such and such? Because dollars are the currency. Similarly, punya is the currency. So Shukadeva Goswami is using that as an example. How many pious activities? Just to show you that the position of the cowherd boys is so incomparable and actually can't be attained by any material methods. So it's just a different way of saying, how great is that? Similarly, calling Krishna Shushlokamali, the performer of pious acts. It's just a way of looking at his glories. It's, you're saying that everything he does is beneficial for everyone. You're using that terminology, the pious actor, because in a civilized society, people are, they have fingertip awareness, so to speak, of piety and how to do pious deeds. So therefore, to fix their attention on Krishna, he's called the pious actor. Oh, ooh, that sounds good, pious actor. Of course, in today's uncivilized society, who cares about pious activity? How many of you, when you were applying for a job or applying for the university or applying for PR, you know, on the application was the question, how many pious activities have you performed? Who cares? No one even knows what a pious activity is. In fact, they would probably be, they'd probably reject you if you told them you were performing pious activities. they would feel very threatened. So, a real human civilization culminates in developing, the people developing a taste for hearing and chanting about Krishna. Otherwise, as Bhagavatam states, shrama eva hi kevalam. All your occupational activities are a useless waste of time if they haven't led to a taste for hearing and chanting about Krishna. There is the bottom line. So in other words, we need to move beyond just a ritualistic understanding of the dynamics of bhakti into actual experience. The actual experience in which we have our own personal victory, Param Vijayate, Sri Krishna Sankirtana. We can see that we made it through some tough times by increasing the quality of our hearing and chanting. As Prabhupada writes in the purport, impersonalists are very much afraid of hearing the activities of the Lord, because they think that the happiness derived from the transcendental situation of Brahman is the ultimate goal of life. I know one example. There was one person who was with an impersonalist group, with an impersonalist Swami. He's a Westerner, but he was involved with this group that was based in India and also had worldwide affiliations. So, he was given a mantra to meditate on every day. It was an unbonafide mantra. Om Vishva Pradipa Namaha. I offer my obeisances to the universal light. So every day for 20 years, you would practice that mantra. But then, somehow or other, through association with Krishna devotees, he became attracted to reading Prabhupada's books. And he just started reading Prabhupada's books night and day while going on with his the meditation, the so-called meditation that his guru had given him. But he was starting to feel torn. On the one hand, Prabhupada's books were such nectar. And of course, in the purports, Prabhupada was smashing him in the Mayavadis. On the other hand, he had this lifelong commitment to this impersonal sadhu, apparent sadhu. Later, something else would come out. But anyway, so he was torn. On the one hand, I love Prabhupada's books. On the other hand, there's my lifelong relationship, with this such and such Ananda Swami. As Prabhupada would say, this Ananda, that Ananda, so many Anandas. So, you can understand how he was feeling in a difficult situation, because he wanted to be true to his relationship with this appears to be a sadhu, and he was even telling me how, he's one of the few persons in India who has been crowned with the title Mandaleshwara. So I tried to tell him, every village in India has its Mandaleshwar or Baba this or, it's so easy, give yourself a title, Some persons in the village get together and you are the Mandaleshwar. And then you go show that, you have some certificate or something, you show, I am one of the few persons on the planet given the title Mandaleshwar. Same with Jagat Guru. As Prabhupada would always comment, in India, persons who've never been out of their village call themselves Jagat Guru. Or at the Kumbh Mela, when the Kumbh Mela comes and all the sadhus from everywhere gather, and some big Mayavadi swamis riding on elephants, and their followers say, he's Jagat Guru. But he's never been anywhere. So, anyway, this devotee, now he's a devotee, but he was going through tough times. So he went to his guru for clarification. The guru has an ashram, nowhere near any holy dham, because, it's impersonalism. What is a holy dham? Everything is Brahman. So, he went to the ashram to ask the guru what to do. And it took a while to get a darshan. Meanwhile, he's just there in the ashram reading Srimad Bhagavatam. And his spiritual elders were kind of looking at him like, have you gone crazy? What, you reading Srimad Bhagavatam? Stories? Mythological stories? Oh, we understand now. You need to read these myths, these stories, to build your meditational focus on Brahman. Okay, we understand that. That's all right. As long as you understand that these stories are not the ultimate, you can use them as a device for increasing your focus on the oneness. So they told him like that. Anyway, he went on reading Srimad Bhagavatam. So then he got his chance to meet with the sadhu, and the sadhu, played it cool. Well, bhakti, it's just one of the ways of developing your meditation on Brahman. If that works for you to get to the ultimate of oneness, all right, just bear in mind it's a temporary construction that some people need. Of course, the guru told him that if you just focus on the universal light, you'll get everything. But some people can't do that. So therefore, if you want this, you know, a bit of Krishna, all right, that's all right. But always remember, beyond Krishna. Of course, where in Bhagavad Gita do you see anything about beyond Krishna? The very phrase is nonsensical. As soon as you think beyond Krishna, you should know you're totally concocting, and you just think you're like saying horse eggs, sky flower. Beyond Krishna, it should have no meaning for you. The two words shouldn't form a meaningful definition in your mind. As Krishna says, "Mata pratanam danya kinchid asti dananjaya." There is no truth superior to me. There's nothing beyond me. When Krishna in the Gita says nothing beyond him, he means not even Vishnu or Narayan. Nothing beyond him means nothing beyond her. Not even his own Vishnu forms. Not even Narayan and Vaikuntha. So anyway, he ended his darshan with the guru, and he mentioned, you know, we're about an 8-hour trip from Vrindavan. I think the guru's ashram was in Madhya Pradesh or something. We're about an 8-hour trip or so from Vrindavan. I'd like to go to Vrindavan. The guru really tensed up. Vrindavan, you've got to be very careful there. There are many things there to catch you. There are many allurements there to pull you. Don't go. So he didn't go. And he was very despondent. He eventually dropped his reading of Bhagavatam. He was even chanting Hare Krishna. He dropped that. But he was miserable. Even his wife told him, you know, you were much happier when you were chanting Hare Krishna. But he couldn't resolve this conflict. So then, it was revealed that the sadhu was having major problems for quite some decades. the sadhu had many extraneous activities, many extracurricular or... the sadhu had a taste for the normal Kali Yuga indulgences. So it was big, explosion in the organization. And anyway, that person is now a firmly established devotee. His biggest obstacle that he had to overcome was this deeply planted impression that hearing and chanting about Krishna is like some, it's actually a material activity. It's a pious activity that's done to take you to the platform of Brahma. Some people are smart enough and shrewd enough to realize you just go right for Brahma, the oneness. Others who are more simple and who are more sentimental. They need the Krishna Katha to develop their meditational powers, just like you need a ladder to climb up to the roof, and once you get to the roof, you throw the ladder away. So that notion was so deeply embedded in him. It gave trouble for a while, because in every purport, what do you read? The Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Personality of Godhead. Prabhupada just drums it into you. And meanwhile, everything you've been taught is the opposite. This term, by the way, Personality of Godhead, is coming from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. If you know anything about Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, you'd be amazed how true to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur Srila Prabhupada was. He took the main precepts. He didn't speak in the same way as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, but he took all the main precepts and push them on, including Personality of Godhead. which is actually a very in-your-face terminology. It gives you no wiggle room. I was looking at a book that came out a few years ago in the USA called American Veda. And it was about, it was a history of all the swamis and sadhus who came from India to the USA from Vivekananda onward. And in every case, through documented research, the book found that these persons had some problems. In every case, whatever, you know, you name it, you, whatever yogi's name you may know, yogi this, yogi that, this Ananda, that Ananda, this Amrita, and so on. They, all of them had documented problems. The book was well footnoted, researched. And then, when the author was discussing Prabhupada, he said, there is no way that such an uncompromising person with such an uncompromising with such uncompromising guidelines can ever be possible, can ever be popular. But he said, one thing I can say for sure, the Swami, this Prabhupada, was never touched by any controversy and left this world with his uncompromising nature intact. He thought that was a, you know, that was like a, how do you say, a negative thing. But actually, indirectly, he's glorifying Prabhupada. He's so uncompromising. There's no question of his having ever done anything wrong. And he certainly left this world with that reputation intact. So he thought that's like kind of, you know, he's not very practical. He didn't understand he needed to bend. His movement will never be popular. So it's very interesting how, amazingly, of all these yogis and sadhus who came over from India, I remember as a young devotee, 1973, doing book distribution on the streets of New York, every other person I would meet was saying, oh, I'm following such and such yogi, such and such guru. And each one of them would tell me, he's God. Come and see God. There was the boy God. There was the mystic God. It was like every day at New York International Airport, a new God from India would come in on Air India. That's what it felt like. It's hard for you to appreciate that now because things, you know, Maya has changed. But that's the way it was in 73. So much so that Prabhupada made the statement that if you go on distributing these books vigorously, one day all these fake gurus and sadhus will be finished. And that was hard for us to believe. It was like saying, in the midst of a flood of water, one day there'll be no water. one day there'll be no gurus and bogus gurus and sadhus. But indeed, that's what happened. The supply dried up. The biggest problem that these Mayavadis do is not so much that they say, I am God, you are God. Most people, you know, have they can't really bring themselves to say they're God. A few extremists. But the real damage is more subtle and more sinister, and that's why I like you to check out in your consciousness to see if there are any traces of this more sinister effect, in which you think that hearing and chanting about Krishna is a pious activity or a material activity, and it doesn't really solve the problems of life. Your doubts about that are the gift of the Mayavadis. You won't say you're God, but you will have doubts about just hearing about Krishna, that's the highest pleasure in life. Just chanting Hare Krishna, I don't know. Of course, we say that, but do we actually have that personal victory? Once every devotee has that personal experience, then you'll see such a strong community of devotees. And in a strong community of devotees, the hearing and chanting about Krishna becomes even stronger and more tasty. Lord Kapiladev says, Satam prasangam mamavirya samvido bhavanti hrikkana rasayana kata. The talks about Krishna, when they're done in the association of dedicated devotees, those talks become sweeter and more powerful. So this is real communalism. This is a real community. A community that through spiritual dedication is able to increase the perceived potency of chanting and hearing about Krishna. The more you advance, the sweeter the taste becomes. The more you have to share with others. So this is our real wealth. This is our real luxury. This is the ultimate gain. And this is something each devotee needs to strive for. How is it that the highest perfectional gain of humanity is to engage in discussions of the activities and glories of the pious actor? Krishna says the same thing in Bhagavad Gita, Machitama Gata Prana, Bodhayanta Parasparam, Tushanti Cha Ramanti Cha. My pure devotees come together and discuss my glories, and they derive great satisfaction and bliss, enlivening one another and conversing about me. Is that really possible? Is that really practical? You can derive great satisfaction and bliss sitting down and discussing about Krishna? But this is for every devotee to experience. And attaining that experience is the real purpose of the ashram life. Wherever you live, whether in the temple ashram, in your own home, whatever of the four ashrams that you occupy, your goal is to taste the victory. Personally taste the victory that comes from hearing and chanting about Krishna. Then you have the real wealth. All right, any questions? Yeah. Better you quote Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna says, if you act in full consciousness of him, you'll cross over all the obstacles of conditional life by his grace. And the whole purpose of Bhagavad Gita is to teach you how to act in full consciousness of Krishna. That's why Arjuna is on the battlefield. It's not that Krishna told Arjuna, okay, Arjuna, I'll drive the chariot, you stay in the back and sleep. So if we want the kind of lifestyle in which we're dependent on Krishna, then we have to be very intelligent. We have to design a lifestyle very scientifically. Not that we just act in this way, act in that way, and then say, oh, depending on Krishna. We're always honing our lifestyle, no matter what ashram you're in. Brahmachari, Grihastha, Sannyasi, you're always honing your lifestyle. You're always trying to see, how am I wasting time that could be used better in Krishna's service?
To the point we mentioned that this is the highest perfection and gain.
Yes, that's why Lord Chaitanya says, Dudaivam Ijasa Mahaji Nanuraga. I'm so unfortunate, I have no raga. I've got no attraction for the holy name. So then we want to strive to develop that. By selflessly serving Srimad Bhagavatam, by selflessly serving the holy name, you start to get a taste for the Bhagavatam and for the holy name. Vasudeva Kataruchi, San Mahat Seva Vipra. By rendering service to the devotee, you get the taste for hearing and chanting about Krishna. So this is our lifestyle program. Not that I don't have any taste, so what can be done? We need to arrange our life so that we develop the taste. Otherwise, all a useless waste of time. So Srila Prabhupada has given us so many activities that we can engage in for Krishna's pleasure. And the result of those activities is that we gain a taste for hearing and chanting about Krishna. And then ultimately, on the high level of bhakti, you start to see that washing Krishna's floor is the same as chanting Hare Krishna. In the absolute sense, that's true. But don't artificially act on that platform prematurely. I don't need to chant my japa because doing everything for Krishna, it's all the same. So as Prabhupada writes in Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is true that all the processes of devotional service are one. They're actually all the same. But you have to be guided in that oneness by the guru. So you can't say that because I'm building something for Krishna or making budgets for the temple expenses, that's the same as chanting Hare Krishna, therefore I don't chant Hare Krishna. These activities are one, at the same time they're different. So hearing and chanting about Krishna is the foundation of all the other devotional processes. So whether one's a brahmachari, brahmacharis should get together and hear and chant about Krishna. Grihastha, the family should get together, hear and chant about Krishna. And gradually the taste will come, especially when there is selfless devotional service. The more you try to give Krishna to others, the more you get Krishna for yourself. Remember Korma the Brahmana in South India during Lord Chaitanya's tour? Lord Chaitanya would take meals at various householders' homes. So Korma Brahmana invited Mahaprabhu to his home and gave Lord Chaitanya the royal, the sadhu reception, the Vedic reception, washing his feet, and the whole family would drink the water that had washed Mahaprabhu's feet. And then serving lunch. And Korma Brahmana suddenly said to Lord Chaitanya, I cannot bear any more the Vishaya Taranga, the waves of material life. I cannot take it anymore. I want to go with you. Take me with you. What was Lord Chaitanya's response? Don't speak like this again. You engage in hearing and chanting about Krishna in your home. And in that way, you'll come to me. In fact, Lord Chaitanya said, more than you're coming to me, I'll always be with you. And then Lord Chaitanya gave him the instruction how to be always with Mahaprabhu. Yare deko tare koho Krishna upadesh. Ama agya guru hoya tare desh. Wherever you go, whomever you meet, teach the science of Krishna, and that way be a guru and save the land. So that's the instruction that Mahaprabhu gave to a householder.
Give
me an example. What kind of place? What kind of place? When you go to a wedding and you want to talk about Krishna. What do you mean?
Somebody's house.
Program or bhakti program or social gathering? You have to be very strong to counteract that kind of environment. Because they're thinking social gathering is for social purposes. Who is this old man coming here talking about Krishna? He's a dinosaur. Here, have a drink. You have to be strategic and choose your battles. Find the best ways to inject knowledge of Krishna in society. Generally, it's so that going to social gatherings is a waste of time. People are not there to hear anything about the ultimate goal of life. If you're very expert, you might be able to infiltrate. But generally what happens is that you become influenced by the situation. And then you start thinking, this is not very practical, this Krishna consciousness. No one wants to hear about it. In fact, it would be better if I acted just like them, and then they would take me more seriously. Yes, I'll have a drink. Then they'll respect me. So you have to be aware of what level you're on and what you're capable of doing in terms of outreach. But you can always do something. There are other ways you can do than going to social gatherings. Just like everyone in the Melbourne Mahaprabhu community should have a full set of Prabhupada's books. Not simply on your phone, but there's a big difference having the books, the physical books in your house. And actually, the latest scientific research shows that by reading a physical book as opposed to an e-device, you retain more. Because there's something about the physicality of the book when you're in touch with it and reading it that you can remember more of what you're reading. Whereas using an e-device requires much more concentration. And in fact, scientific research has found that for most people, what do they remember using their e-device? They remember where the information is. They don't remember the information. I know it's on my iPad. I know which folder it's in. But they don't remember the information itself. Whereas when you have a book, somehow or other, the physicality of the book allows for more remembrance of the actual information. Now, I'm not saying, you know, throw away your iPads or Kindles, whatever. No, they're very convenient. I use it myself. At the same time, my point is that along with the e-devices, we need in everyone's home a full set of the physical books. The full set of Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, it takes over your living room. It emanates because those books are the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So there's something you can do. You can see that everyone in the Mahaprabhu Mandir community has a full set of Prabhupada's books. Why not? All right. Have your iPhone, you know, have your devices with the Veda base on it or this, that. Fine. But still, you'll see that being able in your own home to sit down and read a physical book is a great luxury, and you actually retain better. Turning the physical pages. It's like japa, you know, you have your hands on the beads and you're twirling each bead. So there's a physical, you're involving the sense of touch while you're hearing the mantra, vibrating the mantra. So it's a little bit like that in terms of reading physical books. You're in contact with the pages, the physicality, because conditioned souls are very physical, you know. So holding the book in your hand and turning the pages, you actually remember, scientific research shows, you remember the information better. Still, the e-devices are very convenient, but you should have both. So who can organize that? That everyone has a full set. And don't be discouraged by saying, well, no one reads books anymore, it's all on their phone. No, you have both. That's the ultimate acquisition for the home. So we need persons in the community who will push that, who will not be discouraged by saying no one has books anymore, they just have their phones, they have their iPads. Yes, yes, that's also good, but you need the books in your house. You need the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the form of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita. And also by having those books in your house, when people come to visit you, they see this bookcase full of Prabhupada's books. What is that? Your children also will see the books and remember that. My mother was just telling me how she said when I was, I don't know, how old are babies when they start to crawl on the floor? Huh?
One.
You have experience? Some experience, some old experience. How old are babies when they start to crawl on the floor? These guys don't know anything. Any ladies, Matajis, can you say?
8, 9 months,
okay. So my mother was telling me when I was 8 or 9 months old, I would always crawl to a bookshelf and try to drag a book off. But there was no Srimad Bhagavatam. So, another reason why you should have a full set of books in your house, so your babies can crawl to the bookshelf. Yes. You had already asked. Anyone else? Yes. The whole Srimad Bhagavatam. By daily reading, gradually we actually begin to accept that there's nothing beyond hearing and chanting about Krishna. Just like Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj in his last days with us, we engaged in hearing Chaitanya Charitamrita, and then one day he just said to Radhanath Maharaj, "This is it. We're there." He was seeing the spiritual world just by hearing and chanting Chaitanya Charitamrita. We're selflessly engaging in missionary activities and management activities, all with the understanding that the fuel for those activities is hearing and chanting about Krishna. What does second canto of Bhagavatam say? Swanam bhava sororuham. Hearing Srimad Bhagavatam enters into your heart, and for the self-realized person, the hearing of Bhagavatam sits on the lotus flower of your relationship with Krishna, your constitutional position. And then all the remaining dirts and dusts in the heart are cleansed. Just like when there's rain in the autumn, it clears out all the muddy reservoirs of water. We were discussing the other day how both Srila Prabhupada and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur say that you don't engage in solitary bhajan. First, you realize your constitutional position within the public glorification of Krishna, within the Sankirtan. And then, from within the Sankirtan, the public glorification of Krishna, once you've realized your constitutional position, only then can you go off alone for solitary bhajan. So both Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Srila Prabhupada emphasize that point. That the knowledge of your real identity in loving relationship with Krishna comes to you amidst the public glorification of Krishna. Because many persons have the mistake of thinking, oh, I should go off alone and chant Hare Krishna, or this preaching is just external, this outreach is just material or secondary. But the parampara says, you glorify Krishna publicly, giving Krishna to others, and that's where you get the realization of what is your eternal relationship with Krishna. Only then can you go off for solitary bhajan. Okay? Yes. There's a mistake here, thinking that I know the philosophy. I've read it. Bhakti is not simply about knowing, it's about loving Krishna. In the topmost portion of the spiritual world, Goloka Vrindavan, no one even knows Krishna's God. They don't care that he's God. But their feeling in topmost bhava, their attraction for Krishna, and Krishna's attraction for them. So, it's not simply all about, well, I've read this purport before. Just like tomorrow's verse. Look at the purport. There are some froggish philosophers who want to know the Supreme Soul by the means of philosophy and mental speculation. How many times have I read that? I know all that. There's something else going on here. The Bhagavatam is putting you in touch with Krishna. Association. So if you just take it in a gyani way, like, you know, information processing. I process the information in the purports already. No. These purports are putting you in touch with love of Krishna. The Bhagavatam is Krishna's presence. You never get enough. So in order to make firm progress, you have to dispel that misconception you have. I've heard it all. Have you really heard it all? If you actually have heard, then you realize that hearing means you're seeing Krishna. So the real problem is you haven't read enough. You haven't heard enough. You've got to get through that hurdle of thinking, I know it all. I've heard it all. Why should I go to class? They're going to say the same thing. If I go to Bhagavatam class, will there be a speaker who says something new and esoteric? So this is a misconception that can disturb our spiritual life. And we beg the deities for the vision, the proper vision, so that we're not overcome by this illusion that I've heard it all before. No. Go to Bhagavatam class, hear about Krishna, read thinking, I've never heard this before. Because I actually haven't heard it. I had the physical experience of reading, but the actual impact has not hit me yet. So I haven't heard it all before. That's the proper attitude. And then Krishna as Nitya Nutana, eternally fresh, as the super soul in your heart, he will reveal to you how hearing about Krishna, reading about Krishna is ever fresh. But you have to give the super soul a chance to do that. If you cut yourself off from the mercy of the Paramatma, I know it all. I've heard it before. That's the greatest misfortune. You beg Krishna, I haven't heard it. I haven't read it before. I need your help to go deeper. And that's when the bhakti will start to generate powerful results for you. All right. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.